In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Kate Spencer.
And I'm Dori Shafrir. And today we are doing something a little different because we want to both offer our support to our Black listeners, and we also want to use our platform to discuss tangible ways we're committing in the long term to anti-racism and supporting Black organizations and businesses.
I wanted to share a quote that I read last week that really resonated with me. It's by Sonia Renee Taylor. And it says, or she says, self-care that cannot be bothered with justice is just privilege. And that really hit a chord for me. And, you know, we have been thinking, like, hopefully all of you, about how we can work harder at our own anti-racism, both in our own lives and on our podcasting platform, and how we can really hold space for Black people without centering ourselves. And this has been an ongoing conversation for us since starting this podcast, but most definitely, especially in the last week, we have really been reflecting on the work we haven't done and the work we need to do and how we're going to rectify that. So today we want to share some actions we're taking, some places we have donated to, companies and people we are following and supporting. And then we are going to be replaying our interview from November 2019 with Ijoma Oluo, who's the author of So You Want to Talk About Race.
Yes. So to start, we wanted to let everyone know that we've donated $1,000 to each of the following 5 organizations. And we will link to all of these organizations in the show notes. We're donating to Campaign Zero, which is an organization that is committed to ending police violence in America. Black Lives Matter, which is committed to supporting freedom, liberation, and justice, sustainable transformation in Black communities, defunding police, and more. The Bail Project, which helps bail people out of jail and fights against the racist and unjust system that is the bail system, the cash bail system. The Loveland Foundation, which is an organization devoted to a focus on Black women and girls and kind of showing up for them. They have a therapy fund and a lot of other ways that they support Black women and girls in particular. And finally, the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, which provides legal services for people who cannot afford them. And we encourage you to also donate to these organizations or other organizations that are doing similar work at whatever amount you are able to.
Yes. And so we're going to just check in with each other a little bit about some things that we have been doing, thinking about, reflecting on things we hope to do and hope to change in our own practices. and go from there. Sound good, Dory?
That sounds great, Kate.
Okay. The first thing I wanted to share was a list of questions. I'm not going to share the list, but I will. We will be linking to it in show notes and also in the episode post on our website, forever35podcast.com. Past Forever 35 guest Chrissy King posed a really powerful set of questions to her non-Black followers on Instagram. And I am a non-Black follower. And I found it, it's something I've just been reflecting on for the last 24 hours or so. And I just wanted to bring up the first three questions that she asked, because these are the questions, the whole list is stuff that I am sitting with. But I want to start with these three. How am I showing up the other 360 days of the year? How am I showing up for Black people day in and day out? And how am I examining the ways I am complicit every day? And that is something, that is something I think I need to be looking at. I need to write that down and look at every day to make sure these are things I am reflecting on and focusing on. And so one thing I did do that I wanted to share as a suggestion for anyone who might be inspired to do it is that going forward, I am making sure I am paying the Black people who educate me on social media. I have spent a lot of time learning about anti-racism from many amazing people and never really acknowledging the fact that it is labor that I should be compensating them for. So I have gone and I've started to go through a lot of people who I follow, who I have turned to learn from, who I've, you know, read their posts, who I have felt like I've gotten something from their work, have been educated by them, continued to be, and started supporting their Patreons, which is something I had not done. And I think in this like process, Dory, of really tapping into what it means to be anti-racist is recognizing that as a white person, I'm going to make mistakes and looking at the ways in which I am complicit and in making these mistakes. And so this feels like a big thing that I should have done that I haven't done. And so it's something I'm really committing to doing. So today I went through and started making sure I was properly compensating the people whose work I really value and has educated me. So if anyone is inspired, I would encourage you, I would encourage you to do the same. One thing I noticed that was really cool is a lot of people have $1 levels on their Patreon. So it really makes it accessible. A few of the people for today that I started making sure I am a patron of, Nicole Cardoza, who is just a really amazing entrepreneur and yoga teacher and educator. Aja Barber, who writes about intersectionality in fashion and sustainable fashion. Rachel Cargill, who's an amazing activist and educator. And The Conscious Kid, which is an Instagram that I followed that I really was like, oh, this is a great Instagram. Put it in my stories, but never really spend time like sitting and looking at who was behind it and realizing that they have ways of you being able to pay them for their work. So I am taking my time to make sure I'm going through my different feeds and different places where I really learn from the people who are putting work out there into the world and making sure I am compensating them for their work.
Yeah. And I also started supporting Rachel Cargill on Patreon. She has some really great resources on there. Her Patreon is called The Great Unlearning. And she's a lot of really, really good stuff on there. So I would suggest, even if you don't want to support her on Patreon, that you check out her work. And I also, you know, I think there's often people that we follow on Twitter who we are learning from, and a lot of them have links to their Cash App or their PayPal or their Venmo in their Twitter bios. And if you feel like you have learned something from them, give them some money. I've done this a few times with different people who I realize, like, oh, I am following along these threads and learning so much from this person. And like, who cares if it's not in an article in the Atlantic? Like, I'm still learning a lot from them, and they deserve to be compensated for their labor. So, Kate, I'm really glad you brought that up. I think that's really important. And I also want to touch on something that you mentioned, which is, how am I showing up the other 360 days of the year, which Donna Chrissy King said. And this is something I've been thinking about a lot, because I think that there is this tendency among non-Black people to, whenever there is a crisis, to mobilize, right? Like, I do this too, like, post donation links on my Instagram and post, you know, quotes about social justice and anti-police brutality, and, you know, just get very worked up, and then the immediate crisis passes and I kind of go back to my regular life, right? And
right. I mean, that's,
I think,
what
the idea, no, it's okay. I just think, like, we need to really question that impulse and interrogate it and say, why am I only thinking about anti-racism in times of crisis? Because it's not, it is a crisis for Black people every day. And we have the privilege of it not being a crisis for us every day.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think these words are really powerful. And I think what you and I are both committing to is saying, like, we are going to be thinking about this every day. And how can we think about this every day? And because we are also in a position to be able to support organizations and people and companies financially, we need to do that. And so that's kind of what we're saying right now.
Yes. And what, you know, you and I are, we're here recording a podcast, but honestly, the bulk of the work we do on the show happens to actually be off the air, which is kind of strange. But I think you and I are going to be, and have already started, really setting up ways to reflect and then enact tangible change in ways in which we try to keep learning and keep making sure that we are using this podcast in a way that reflects these values.
Yeah. And so to that end, to that end, we have decided that we are going to come up with some very tangible and specific goals related to anti-racist work and supporting Black creators, Black businesses, Black organizations. We're still kind of figuring all this out. And so I anticipate we will be able to announce a concrete plan within the next couple of weeks. But in the meantime, we wanted to talk about some of the things that we're doing. And we also wanted to highlight some Black-owned beauty, skincare, and wellness businesses, because I think on the show, one of the things that we haven't done a good enough job of is spending money and publicizing the work of Black-owned beauty businesses. And there's a lot of really amazing ones out there. So we put together a list. And again, we will link to these in the show notes on our website. We encourage you to patronize these companies. And yeah, so here are a few that we have highlighted. And I also want to shout out, there's a very helpful thread on Fat Mascara's Facebook group that asked for recommendations of Black-owned beauty businesses. And I learned a lot there. And I also learned a lot from Cosmopolitan beauty director Julie Wilson's Instagram. She has a couple of highlights in her Instagram stories of Black-owned businesses that I would highly recommend you check out. And again, we will also link to that. Okay, so in the kind of skincare slash wellness category, we have a company called Honeypot, which offers pads, tampons, wipes, etc., all natural. They look amazing. a company called Black Girl Sunscreen, which is, they say it's sunscreen made by women of color for people of color because we get sunburned too. And it's sunscreen that dries clear. And I think it's SPF 30. And again, you know, cruelty-free, all natural, moisturizing, etc. A company called Clur, which is this super luxurious seeming botanical based skincare and self-care products from a woman who is trained as an esthetician. And former Forever 35 guest Brooke Devard, the host of Naked Beauty, loves their body oil. So I have ordered some and I'm going to try it for myself. I'm very excited. It seems amazing. Hana Hana Beauty, which is a wellness and skincare brand that pays double the fair trade rate for shea butter from Ghana. And they have shea butter in a vanilla scent, vanilla lavender, I think, a eucalyptus scent. And I think they have a vanilla amber scent as well, which sounds great. Oh, and they've unscented. Unscented shea butter too, and lemongrass. So I ordered some eucalyptus shea body butter because eucalyptus just makes me feel like I'm at a spa.
It's a delicious smell.
It's such a great smell.
It is a great smell.
I'm really, really looking forward to getting that shea butter. Company called Gold with an E, which has superfood based latte blends and face masks. Kate, I feel like you would get into some of their products.
Yeah, I actually was. I was already looking and putting things into a cart.
I have your number.
You do. I appreciate that you truly know me, and that means a lot.
I mean, this cacao turmeric latte blend just sounds really good.
Yeah, that sounds like heaven,
right? It's basically hot chocolate, but has turmeric in it and other good things for you. And this company also makes face masks.
This is like my combination of my two favorite things.
I know. Okay. For anyone male identified in your life, there's a company called Bevel that makes men's grooming products. They have a beard trimmer. They have razors, they have shaving cream, they have hair grooming products, they have safety razors, they have a whole shave system. So just like a lot of great stuff for men. And it all looks very like sleek. So I know sometimes men are hesitant about skincare and, you know, grooming products, but I think these are worth checking out for sure. Mm-hmm. Okay, this next company is called Beneath Your Mask, and everything seemed amazing. their signature product is Heal Whipped Skin Soufflé. It's a body lotion. It won the 2019 Allure Best of Beauty winner. And I have ordered some. It promises to leave my skin feeling soothed, deeply hydrated, and pampered. So I'm excited about that.
And it's all the frees. It's vegan, cruelty-free, gluten-free,
yes,
GMO-free,
totally.
Paraben-free. Yeah,
and phosphate, then I also got their Polish Detoxifying Body Scrub. And I will tell you, I am not a huge body scrub person. Like, I feel like they're one of those things that, like, I'm often gifted and I don't use them. But this one seemed amazing. And one of the reasons that I was intrigued is it says, for maximum exfoliation, apply to dry skin. And massage over the entire body in circular motions. and then you rinse, and then you pat the skin dry, and then you follow it up with their whipped skin souffle.
With the souffle. Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
Exactly. But I was like, oh, okay. I can't, like, I don't know. Maybe it's just something about, like, getting in the shower and putting on body scrubs that I don't know. But I'm intrigued to try this. It also says that it's good for eczema and psoriasis. And I have eczema, and I also have keratosis KP. I have KP.
KP. It's easier.
On my arms. And so I'm cautiously optimistic that this will help. And then there is the Black and Green Marketplace, which is a beauty and wellness marketplace featuring products made by Black artisans. And it was founded by Forever 35 guest Dr. Kristen Henderson. And they just have some amazing products, and a lot of products by smaller companies that you might not be able to find anywhere else. Okay. Those are my skincare and wellness recs. Can we move on to makeup?
Yes, I'm right here with you.
Okay, great.
Following along eagerly.
Just wanted to make sure. Okay, this first one is she's a titan of the makeup art. She's a makeup artist titan, Pat McGrath. So she has her line, Pat McGrath Labs, which is her makeup line. And I mean, her stuff is just,
it's great.
So good.
Yeah.
She's so good. And one of the things that I love about her line is that she doesn't offer a ton of products. But you know that everything she offers is amazing, and her packaging is so cool. And I'm just like,
her palettes,
like everything is so, so, so cool. So, and like such good quality. So Pat McGrath. Okay. Another company called Beauty Bakery, and they spell that bakery with an IE. And they're another makeup company, and their stuff is so cute. It's like, everything is like desserty. So like their lipsticks are Cake Pop Lippies, and their lip gloss is Creme Lip Whips. And then they have like stuff in the shape of an ice cream sandwich, and like, it's, everything is really cute. And they have a ton of different shades and some really nice palettes. And yeah, their stuff just like seems really, really nice. Okay, moving on to a company called the Lip Bar. I love a kit, I have to say.
Did you buy their kit?
I did buy their kit. They have a fast face kit, which has like the six products that you need to put on your beautifully made up face. So it comes with foundation, a face quad, brow, like a brow liner, an eyeliner, mascara, and a lipstick, and also comes with a brush. And they have it for different skin shades, and you can take a quiz on their site to determine your correct shade. And then, like, within the kit, you have some other options, like you choose your lipstick shade, you choose your brow liner shade. And it's $99, which for like six products seemed
great. Yeah.
Very reasonable to me.
And so they are sold at Target, Lip Bar.
Yes, they're sold at Target. And I believe they also have a store. Yes, they have a flagship store in Detroit. And so if you're in Detroit when things reopen, you can book a makeup appointment, you can have a birthday party there, you can kind of do all sorts of fun things at their flagship store. Okay, next company is called OMA, and that's UOMA Beauty. And they have, one of the things they're known for, they have foundation with like a huge range of shades, and they also have gorgeous lipsticks. So I highly suggest checking them out. I also love their packaging, and they also have some really, really nice palettes. And they have 51 foundation shades,
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Their lipsticks are look amazing.
Don't they look amazing?
Yeah. They're gorgeous.
Their stuff just looks so nice. Okay. This next one is another one that... So this one is Danessa Myricks Beauty, and this is a makeup artist-founded artisanal makeup line known for its ColorFix products. And ColorFix is a hybrid cream color and extreme long-wearing paint that can be safely used as complexion on the lips, eyes, and cheeks. I will admit, I was a little intimidated by this company. Like, everything looks amazing and very like professional. They have ColorFix foils, which are in these like shiny kind of glittery colors, and I was just like, I feel like I need a tutorial to use these products. They look so nice. So I plan on ordering something from them. I feel like I need to like do some more education, some makeup education.
They have loose pigment on their site, like glitter and metals. That's so cool.
Yes, okay. They have all this really cool stuff. They have stuff that you can use to like make your powder eyeshadow creamy. Like, they just have all this like very professional stuff. That I really want to try, but I also feel a little intimidated by, to be perfect. I want to be perfectly honest about that. Like, I feel like this is like a level higher of makeup knowledge than I have.
Well, Dory, I believe that you can get there.
I think I can get there. Okay, next company is called Mented Cosmetics. They are especially known for their semi-matte lipsticks. And they also offer a lip kit, which is 3 lipsticks for $45, which, again, pretty good deal. And their stuff also looks very nice. Okay. The next company is called Pear Nova, which is cruelty-free nail care. And they also offer gel nail polish. So if you do at-home gels, you can get their polish. And all of their stuff is cruelty-free and vegan and 10-free, you know, free of all the nasty stuff that is in a lot of nail polishes.
Yeah, yeah.
I think some of them are 5 free, some of them are 10 free. And then they also have a salon in Chicago. So again, if you're in Chicago and when things reopen, you can check them out. And then, of course, no list of Black owned makeup companies would be complete without mentioning Fenty.
You gotta mention Fenty.
I mean, I love Fenty. I think you love Fenty too.
I don't want
to speak for you, but I think
No, you can in this regard. Yes, I do really. Everything I've tried from their line is amazing.
Yes.
It's just gorgeous. It's like gorgeous. It's long lasting.
So gorgeous. Okay. And then there were a few hair companies that I also just wanted to shout out. The first one is called Brio Geo.
I like their stuff.
Yeah, their stuff is so nice. Cruelty-free natural hair care products for all different hair textures. And they have like hair repair oils. They have scalp revival exfoliating shampoo, masks for your hair. Their stuff is really nice, and they have no sulfates, silicones, parabens, phthalates, DEA, artificial dyes. Like, it's all super clean and natural. Okay, another company is called TGIN, which stands for Thank God It's Natural, which has natural hair care products that are geared more towards curly-haired. I think it's more geared towards Black women and curly-haired people. Their stuff looks really, really nice. And I believe they also have a shop, although I might be wrong about that. But yeah, you can find their stuff at, they do have a shop. They have a shop in Chicago. And you can find their stuff nationwide as well. The final company I just want to mention is called Miel Organics. And they also have just a ton of all natural stuff, mostly geared towards Black women. That just seems really nice. And I think they do a lot of work in the community and just seem great. And then I also want to mention that the company Carol's Daughter, which comes up a lot when people are talking about Black owned beauty companies, they were bought by L'Oreal in 2014. So they are no longer Black owned. They are a Black founded company. So I'm like including them with an asterisk, I guess.
And then you mentioned Cosmopolitan beauty director Julie Wilson. Her yes. Instagram is a good resource for other Black owned beauty businesses. Is that right?
Yes. I mentioned her at the beginning of the conversation. Her Instagram is great. And she currently has a highlight of a ton of Black owned beauty businesses and like clothing businesses and some other companies. So that is just kind of, I feel like I'm just sort of scratching the surface here. And I'd love to hear if listeners have favorite Black owned beauty and wellness businesses. And I would love to buy from them and mention them on the podcast. And then sort of along those lines, we're also curious about who your favorite Black influencers, podcasters in this space are. We want to talk to them. We want to elevate their voices. We'd just love to hear who you all are following, listening to, reading, etc.
Yeah. And, we had gone back and forth on whether or not we should do an intention to at the end of this episode and what it would even be. But I think that this is an intention for us that is lifelong, right, Dory? Like, yes. This is a permanent intention that we are focused on and determined to do the work and stick with it.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a short break. And then I'm excited that we're re-airing this interview with Ijoma. It is really, it's like one of the interviews that has like really, really stuck with me since we did it.
Yes. And if you have not yet read So You Want to Talk About Race, please, please, please pick it up and read it front to back. It's fantastic.
It's so good. Okay. We'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I like to care for my skin, duh. And It's also something that I do love to kind of like get into the research on.
You do have a curious mind.
Look, I have a curious mind. I can't help it.
You do.
But today's sponsor, OneSkin, has made that easy because they do their own fantastic research for their products. In fact, their products are scientifically validated to improve your skin's health while targeting the root cause of aging. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin, and they've got several studies to back it up. They also have an amazing new sunscreen.
Ooh, our favorite.
Our fave. It's the OS1 Shield Protect and Repair SPF 30 Plus. It's got the peptide. It's a mineral sunscreen. It's got antioxidants. It comes in tinted and untinted. I mean, like, what can't this thing do? I'm just saying. I love it. It's so easy to use, and I love that it's just like zoop, and it feels so nice going on. But don't take my word. Don't take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and was recently recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands of 2024. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code FOREVER at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code FOREVER. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support your show and tell them we sent you. Our guest today is Ijoma Oluo. Welcome, Ijoma.
Hi.
Hi, we're so glad to have you.
I'm happy to be here.
Ijoma Oluo is a Seattle-based writer, speaker, and internet yeller. Her work on social issues such as race and gender has been published in The Guardian, The Stranger, Washington Post, Elle Magazine, NBC News, and more. And her New York Times best-selling first book, So You Want to Talk About Race, was released in January 2018 with Seal Press. Ijoma was named one of the most influential people in Seattle by Seattle Magazine, one of the 50 most influential women in Seattle by Seattle Met, one of the Root's 100 most influential Americans in 2017 and 2018, and is the recipient of the Feminist Humanist Award 2018 by the American Humanist Association, the Media Justice Award by the Gender Justice League, and the 2018 Aubrey Davis Visionary Leadership Award by the Equal Opportunity Institute. And we are so excited to have her here to talk about her book and about self-care. And yeah, so let's get into it.
Can we start, Ijoma, just for listeners who aren't familiar with your book, can you, and Dory and I have both read it, can you tell us, tell us generally about what it is and also kind of what your experience has been since publishing it? Obviously, it's a New York Times bestseller, which is amazing. And I'd love to hear just kind of what it has been like, since it came out for you.
Sure. The book is called So You Want to Talk About Race. So it's pretty self-explanatory. It's a kind of a guidebook on helping with your conversations on issues of race and racism in America. It's really designed to kind of help people get past some of the stumbling blocks that frequently kind of doom conversations on race for your everyday life in work, you know, at home, in your community, to really get past those initial conflicts and to really find areas for change. So each chapter kind of tackles issues or questions that people kind of stumble upon regularly when talking about issues of race. The book came out in January of last year, and it's been amazing. It's been really well received. It's been used in colleges all across the country, workshops all across the country. It's been amazing to hear from people about the difference it's made in their life. And it's definitely a book that keeps going. It's been interesting to watch just steady use and, you know, over the last almost 2 years now, and to see it still be relevant and something that people are still recommending to each other, and to see it really improving not only relationships, but, you know, actual situations that are impacting people of color across the country and even outside of the United States.
And we should say that it came out in the paperback edition in September. And you wrote a new introduction for the paperback, which I thought was, or a preface for the paperback that I thought was interesting, where you kind of talk about some of the, I guess, some of the things that you sort of wish you had discussed in the original edition. Can you talk about a little bit about how you came to those realizations, I guess?
Certainly. I mean, I think this is something that faces every writer, is the things you write stay static, even though writers grow and change.
Yeah.
And often we grow and change because of what we write. And so writing a book on race, my first book, you know, even the process of talking about the book and traveling and hearing from people added to what I felt like, oh, I wish I had this, you know, I wish I could have included this. It changed, it added nuance to my own ideas of what I had written. And seeing it in use also showed some areas where I, you know, could have done more or better. And I think, you know, any writer always thinks they could do more. And I think any topic we write about, we could write multiple books about. But luckily, when you have a paperback, you get to at least give voice to some of that instead of just carrying it with you. And so it was really nice to have the opportunity to talk about what I would like to include. There were some things I learned that, you know, my own privilege had kind of stopped me from realizing, of just care that I could have taken in some areas of the book, especially dealing with issues facing people of color that aren't Black. That's my own lived experience. But also things that I just didn't realize needed to be explained as explicitly as they did. And so, you know, seeing it, and then getting another chance, I'm very grateful that it sold well enough to do, you know, to be able to have a paperback edition so that I could at least include some of those things and talk about it and let people know that I saw it. And, you know, I'm not the last person to write a book about race, and certainly not the first. And it's always important, I think, for us to recognize what more we can do and what could happen next.
I want to ask about cultural appropriation, because we talk a ton about self-care on this podcast and self-care practices. And I think a lot of what we're seeing in self-care right now kind of is, there is a lot of cultural appropriation going on. And so I was wondering if you could kind of speak about how we can bring, you know, more awareness to the ways in which a lot of self-care practices, especially, you know, things that white women are doing, are cultural appropriation.
Yeah, certainly. I would say that, you know, part of what I think we should look at is a lot of the idea of self-care as it is popularized lives well within white supremacy, right? The idea to have this luxury time where you can set everything aside is something that many people of color never get to do. And I would say especially women of color. And so a lot of the practices that are often adopted are not necessarily what we would call self-care, but are survival, right? A lot of the practices other cultures have come up with to get by, to live, or some things that are, you know, survival for communities, communal practices, religious practices, very important practices, are treated as luxury items, as retreats for white people. And it's important to recognize why that's problematic. And it's not problematic that anybody would want some luxury in their life. It is problematic to think that you can take something that was created for survival or for community or, you know, to hold an oppressed people together and not take any of the struggle or not do anything to reconcile your part in that oppression. And that's really where the issue lies for, I think, a lot of people. It's not that people want to, you know, practice yoga or, you know, go on a sweat or do any of these things. It's the fact that these things are things that are part of a culture that is being told they don't have a right to them themselves. And these things were created to balance, you know, and to fight off some of the oppression that white culture has perpetrated and or have been held on to in spite of oppression of white culture. And so then to have people who don't have to face any of that, who don't need these things for that purpose, to say, oh, that's nice, I want some of that, without also thinking, what can I do to ease some of the burden that I'm imposing upon this culture? Or what can I do to make sure that whatever profits be made from this actually goes to the culture that created and maintains it, is in itself just more colonialism and white supremacy. And so I think for me, the focus is not necessarily on the act itself, but in the imbalance behind it, right? The problem is, the symptom is cultural appropriation. Right. The power imbalance ends up looking like cultural appropriation. And what I would love people to look at is the power imbalance, to look at where the problem lies, what makes it cultural appropriation, and tackle that. So tackle the erasure of other cultures, you know, tackle the way in which capitalism cuts communities of color out of any profits from their own creations, you know, tackle the exploitation of communities of color, tackle the centering of whiteness in media and pop culture, you know, all of these things that make cultural appropriation, that give it teeth. Those are the things I would like people to focus on. What oftentimes ends up happening instead is something that lies still within white supremacy, which is people want a list. Well, what can I do if I can't, you know, if I can't do yoga, if I can't, you know, dress up like a geisha, if I can't do all these things, what can I do? And really what people are asking is how can I operate the same way I always have without feeling bad? And instead, if you, you know, people talk about how much they appreciate and love other cultures and they're celebrating other cultures. Well, celebrating other cultures means looking towards the sustainment of that culture and showing appreciation for what was given by trying to not be a burden and to lift any burden that you've placed. And that's really what I want people to start focusing on.
Yeah, I mean, kind of along those lines, I love all the actionable suggestions you have in your book for how people can fight systemic racism. You write, you can try to link to the systemic effects of racism whenever you talk about racism. Can you kind of talk a little bit more about that and explain why this is so important?
Yeah, I mean, it's important for a couple of reasons. One is that what people of color are suffering from is not the sentiments or lack of love from white people, right? And a lot of times we like to keep discussions on race and racism in the hearts, you know, feelings and love and area. And what it really is systems, systemic oppression. It's how those opinions and feelings can be manipulated by the system, or the power that our systems give those feelings. So I can walk down the street and people can think whatever they want of me, and I'm fine with that. What does bother me is that if they decide to act on it, and they decide to act on feelings about me because of the color of my skin, our entire system, our employment system, our government, our media, will line up behind that action to make it more powerful. And that's really what impacts the lives of people of color. And so when we're talking about issues of race, it's important to recognize, A, that it's oftentimes more effective to get people to see why something is a problem that they're doing if they see how they're playing into something more systemic, but also because that's really where the pain lies for people of color. And people of color don't feel heard when all they hear is, oh, I'm sorry if you felt bad when I did this, because it's not, they're not saying I felt bad. You know, if I get talked over in a meeting by a white man, it's not just that it's rude to be talked over. It's because it plays into the general erasure and subjugation that Black women face in workplaces across the country, right? It reinforces that pattern, and it's part of a long trail of events to harm me. And it doesn't exist on its own. And so we need to tie to these larger issues, A, because that's where the real issue is. That's what people of color are talking about when they're talking about these situations. But also because people need to understand the full weight of what they're doing. And they need to also know that it's the systems that they need to attack. And that when they fail to look at their actions, they are supporting oppressive systems. It's not just, I made a mistake or I did what I would do with anyone else. It is, I supported a longstanding, harmful, racist system. So, you know, an example I think I use in the book is, you know, if you make a joke about people of color being late in the office, what you're actually doing is not just making a joke. You are upholding a stereotype that makes Black people less likely to be hired for jobs. And that because we have racist systems that allow Black people to be judged en masse, that, you know, favor negative stereotypes, that want to find reasons to hold white employees above employees of color, then what you're saying is no longer just a joke. And the harm that the brunt of that joke feels, which is not just the Black person you're talking about, but every Black person in an office or Black person who would work in that office, is larger than just a few words. And that's really why we have these conversations. And I think that's why it's important. I think everyone should know, especially white people should know, the broader impact of what they're doing, because people of color are meant to feel that every single day. We feel the full weight of racist actions. That's why we spend so much time focusing on things like microaggressions, because there's nothing micro about them, because they play into a large system that is crushing people.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
When we're talking about these systems and just kind of thinking about topics that come up a lot on our show, which are like skincare, makeup, this kind of larger wellness industry, how can we work toward anti-racism when it comes to these things as well?
I mean, when we're talking about things like skincare and makeup, one is just full accessibility, right? I'm a Black woman who loves skincare, loves makeup, and I'm a light-skinned Black woman. And the amount of products that aren't made for me, the amount of the lack of concern in many conversations around skincare, cosmetics, and the beauty industry in general that erase me and definitely erase people who are darker than me, or even who have skin undertones different than mine, or skin needs different than mine, right? Is shocking for this day and age. Yeah. And looking at, you know, we not only have different skin tones, different hair textures, we have often different skin needs, we're often more sensitive to different ingredients, and also looking at the sourcing and the profit model of many of these industries, right? Some of these ingredients are sourced from areas that harm communities of color. Oftentimes, the businesses themselves practice the erasure of people of color, don't hire people of color, exploit traditional cultural practices for profit while not sharing any of that profit with the communities that they take from, especially things like, you know, the US versions of K-beauty, things like that. And so it's important to look and say, really, you know, am I representing everyone here? Am I open to everyone here? Is this segment something that, you know, does harm to a minority population. Is this something that's useful for everyone? What can I add? What do I need to take away to really make this something that people can really be a part of? And a lot of people don't think about that when it comes to beauty, which to me is actually shocking, because I find communities of color, studies have shown time and time again that, you know, primarily women of color, but people of all genders of color, spend more on beauty and, you know, what people would call self-care products than white women do. And yet we're continuously ignored and underserved.
You make a great point in the book too, just about hair, and talking about how just conversations about hair is centered on white hair. And you know, you, a woman of color, might know every, you know, every product and everything available for white hair, but white women have no idea about what your hair might need or what products might appeal to you. And had just that conversation alone is happening centered in whiteness.
Yes, definitely. And it's something that, you know, it always, you know, I live in a majority white area in Seattle, right? The places where, even today, where I can shop for hair products are very limited. But you'll hear comments even in this day and age, people are shocked. What, you know, you put grease in your hair, you do what? Why? A few years ago, people used to laugh at how rarely black women wash their hair. And now, of course, it's all the rage to, you know, co-wash, which is something that we've been doing forever to maintain moisture in our hair, you know, but we're continuously erased. And then when we are seen, it's really only in an exploitative way. What practices we've been doing for a long time that we've come up with on our own that people come and take and make massive profits off of. There's, you know, satin bonnets are the thing right now. And I was laughing seeing these satin bonnets being sold for $100, which black women have been using forever to keep their hair soft and keep it from breaking at night. And, you know, we buy them for $4 at the beauty supply store. And so it's just, it's interesting to me, because I think all of this idea, it also breeds this exotification. Part of the reason why people always want to touch my hair is because they have absolutely no familiar with it, because it is treated as other. It's not treated as normal. It's not something you would consider writing about in mainstream beauty magazines. It's not something that you would spend a lot of time with in film or television. And so then people treat it as something that's exotic, when it's, you know, there are more people of color in this planet than white people. And we have had hair as long as we've existed, you know, and there's nothing exotic about our hair. And, you know, keeping it, treating it like this mystery and something that you have to explore instead of just respect is another facet of white supremacy.
One of the major themes of your book, it seemed to me, was kind of getting people to understand their privilege, and also kind of anticipating the responses that people might have when they are embarking on these conversations. And I really liked what you had to say about the privilege checklist. And I also just wanted to read this quote from your book that really resonated with me, about checking your privilege, which is, we don't want to think that we are harming others. We do not want to believe that we do not deserve everything we have. And we do not want to think of ourselves as ignorant of how our world works. When somebody asks you to check your privilege, they are asking you to pause and consider how the advantages you've had in life are contributing to your opinions and actions, and how the lack of disadvantages in certain areas is keeping you from fully understanding the struggles others are facing and may in fact be contributing to those struggles. And I was just hoping you could speak to that a little bit. If people are kind of wanting to have these conversations with people in their lives, how they can, I guess, get people to check their privilege.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if you want people to check their privilege, first start with checking your own. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I think everybody can do, right? This is something that I have to do regularly. Mm-hmm. Our privilege is not static. It differs not only, you know, year by year as our situation changes, but it differs depending on what room we're in, mm-hmm. you know? And being aware is just your way of trying to reduce the risk of doing harm to others. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to get comfortable with that yourself, and to come to conversations on privilege with the knowledge that you yourself have privilege that you are not aware of, privilege that is stopping you from fully living your values and helping to the extent that you want to. And, you know, it is causing you to do harm. And we all have to know that, that we, no matter how much time we spend working on this, we have some unchecked privilege out there that is causing us to do harm to others. Because when we tell other people to check their privilege, we have to know that we are one heartbeat away from someone telling us to check ours. And we have to have that kind of generosity in mind when we talk about it. But what I would say is, you know, trying to, when you're trying to get someone to, I think sometimes it helps to say why. And to say, you know, I need you to understand you're not, you know, you're not seeing this. There is a lived experience that you're not understanding here. Your lived experience, regardless of your intentions, is stopping you from seeing something, a lived experience that's different from your own. It's stopping you from understanding an oppression that you haven't faced. And, you know, it is hard to get people to pause and take time with that. But I find that one of the most powerful things we can do is just to model it ourselves. I try to always be as public as possible when I discover I've done something that does harm. And I try to be as accountable as possible. And I do that because, A, it's the right thing to do, because people I've harmed deserve to know that, you know, I see what I've done and that I am holding myself responsible. But also because other people need to see that you won't die. You know, that it really won't kill you. And I find oftentimes just bringing my own, you know, awareness into the room and my own struggle into the room and letting people know that I'm working on it means that people are more likely to hear me when I say the same thing to them. But if they never hear me admit that I've been wrong or that I've done harm or that, you know, my privilege had stopped me from fully seeing a situation, if they never see me reflect or ask questions or say I don't know, then, you know, they're going to feel shamed in a way that is unnecessary when I say that they need to stop and reflect and see. I'm not anti-shame, but there's something very dishonest about the way in which people often pretend that they've never been wrong when they ask other people to do their work, like they've never had to do that work themselves. And we all have our work to do. And I think that instead of, you know, trying to pretend like we've always been perfect, or to use the fact that everyone messes up as an excuse to not do anything, we should instead all be trying to set examples of, you know, open quests for the harm we've done and open growth and welcome growth and what true accountability looks like. We should be striving to show that, you know, striving to practice that. So that way when we need that from others, they will feel safer giving it to us. And, you know, even if they don't act, we know it becomes more obvious that they need to. And, you know, other people who are witnessing that situation know they have a choice, that they could be acting out of the care they say they have and seeking to do less harm, or they could be closing around their privilege and refusing to. And you can really only see those two choices when you show what it looks like to make those choices.
Why do you think these conversations make people so defensive?
I mean, because we're good people. The only people I think who never get defensive about these conversations are scary people who don't actually feel bad, right?
Yeah, right.
I don't want to meet the person who just shrugs, is like, cool, when you tell them they've done harm, you know?
Yeah.
We are good people, however that's defined, who want to do good. We want to help instead of hurt. And to be told that you've hurt someone you care about is a really painful thing. And the first thing you want to do is to make it not true, you know, because no matter what, that's, even if you get for, you know, start doing the work to fix it, you still have to live with the fact you've done harm. You can't erase that harm if you let it hit you. And so it's a natural instinct for people who care to first go, wait, 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 wait. maybe it's not true. You know, maybe that's not me. Maybe I'm still just as good and kind as I thought I was. Maybe I haven't done harm. Maybe I haven't hurt someone I care about. And it's important to pause and realize that's a natural reaction, but it's not helpful, right? Mm-hmm. And that even the denial itself can compound harm. And that if you really are the person you think you are, all that we are is what we strive to be, right? It's not the image you carry of yourself. It's the work you do. And so that means that when someone gives you an opportunity to show that you're not doing the work in a certain area, that you need to pause and recognize it as an opportunity, because no matter how we see ourselves, the only true measure of our quote unquote goodness is the impact we have on the lives of others. And once you know that there's a chance you've been doing something that does harm, there is no amount, you can deny it, you can refuse to see it, but it's still happening. And we have to learn how to process all of those natural reactions as quickly as possible so we can get past that and get to the work and get to the listening and the figuring out what you need to do to make it right or to make sure it doesn't happen again. And so I don't think we reach a point where it ever stops hurting to find out you've harmed someone. I don't want to be the person who doesn't have that twinge, who wishes it wasn't true when I find out I've hurt someone.
Mm.
Because when I do, that means I don't care. But I've learned how to quickly absorb that blow, recognize it's still not about me, and that I'm being given an opportunity to do better and move past the part that's not useful to the person I've harmed and get to the part that is, which is hearing, listening, and figuring out what you need to do to fix it.
So I guess for better and for worse, a lot of these conversations take place on social media, particularly on Facebook and Twitter. And you talk in your book about tone policing. And I was just hoping you could discuss kind of what is it, first of all, and why does it happen so much? I think especially on Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, tone policing happens everywhere. And I will say, like, even right now, we can see this in the election, right? The way in which people of color are really being policed for their language or being told they're too aggressive if they ask tough questions. It's couched in white supremacy. And it's the idea that we have to curry favor with whiteness in order to be heard and in order to get our rights. And that's nothing but more white supremacy. And part of it comes from times when things were much worse, right? When the cost of not begging, of not being polite, of not trying to find a way to sneak things in was very violent. But it is also just the way in which white supremacy maintains itself. It's important to recognize that when telling people who've been harmed, who are actively being harmed, that you will only hear about the harm done if it's said to you politely, if you're comfortable, you know, if you feel safe, is a way of saying, I have the right to judge whether or not you deserve to be hurt.
Mm.
I have the right to deem whether or not your complaints are valid because I am above you. And whether or not people want to admit that's what they think, it is. Because the truth is that none of us have the right to say that we get to judge someone's basic humanity, that we get to decide whether or not someone gets to be heard, whether or not they get to feel safe and secure and their humanity gets to be recognized, because we are all human beings. We are not placed above each other. And to say that you're not going to hear about these fundamental rights unless someone is sweet and kind, unless you like them, unless you approve of their approach, means that you think you're in a position to approve. And it's fundamentally disempowering. It's a way of ensuring that white supremacy stays within our movements anytime that those requirements are enforced. And it needs to be called out because it's incredibly dangerous, because there will always be a time and a place where things are worth being angry about, where things are worth shouting about, where the immediate benefits to whiteness won't be seen for deconstructing parts of white supremacy. And we need to recognize that we still go forward anyways because it's the right thing to do, because we believe in justice, and because the humanity of people of color is non-negotiable. And anytime that we say it is negotiable, anytime we say it needs approval, we undermine that. And that's why it is an issue that's beyond how it deflects, how it slows. It is inherently dangerous to the fight against oppression.
Ijoma, I want to ask you, because you mentioned makeup earlier and your love of makeup, and I follow you on Instagram, and I noticed you are organizing your makeup, and I'm just curious if you could speak to what makeup means to you personally as a practice of self-care and self-love, what the reception has been when you talk about it online, and what it kind of, how it kind of plays out in your day-to-day and your self-expression.
Yeah, certainly. You know, it's interesting for me. I think I have always loved makeup. Even, when I was a little kid, I used to like sneak a little makeup kit to school to put on at recess, even when I wasn't allowed to wear makeup. And my mom, you know, when we were at home, would always let me, you know, dress up and, you know, do whatever I wanted. And I've always loved art. And what was just something I always loved turned into, I guess, kind of what we would call self-care as my work intensified. You know, I do a lot of hard, sometimes brutal work, investigating, you know, some of the real horrors of racism and white supremacy in America. And taking some time to just focus on myself and celebrating myself, celebrating features that white America doesn't necessarily think are beautiful, creating, you know, owning my own face and saying, you know, it gets to be what I want it to be. And as a Black woman, taking time for myself, which I think a lot of times people think Black women don't have a right to, we're supposed to always be working in service of others, is something that kind of just keeps me going. And I really enjoy it. It's definitely a ritual that kind of keeps me connected to myself. And it's interesting because I share it because it's something I create and I'm proud of it. I like it a lot. You know, it's something I put time and effort into. And I was not expecting it to be something that would really pick up with people. But I would say, you know, almost as many people talk to me about how much they love my makeup as they talk to me about how much they love my writing. And there's something that people, I think that for, especially for many women, are told that they're not supposed to take time for themselves, that there's something wrong with spending time celebrating themselves, especially celebrating their face, and that you have to have a certain face that, or that you have to lack, you know, intellect in order for that to be something you want to do, that you can't be a serious person, that you can't care about women's rights, that you can't care about any serious issues if you also care about putting makeup on. And people talk to me about what it means to see that and how shocking it is to get that regular reminder, which to me was just, you know, it wasn't, you know, it was surprising, but it makes sense. And there's pressure. Sometimes people reply to me and say, you know, I want to hear what you have to say. I don't want to see your makeup. And I'm like, cool, but you don't pay my bills. So, you know, you're not paying for the makeup or the words.
Yeah.
So you don't really have a say here. And, you know, I'm a free Black woman. I get to do what I want. But mostly it's people who just really appreciate seeing that. They know I do it for myself because they know most of the time, no one ever sees me in public because I'm a total hermit. I live the rather life where, you know, I barely get out of pajamas. I'm working all day and all night, but I take the time to put on a full face of makeup because I like it, because it's fun. And I don't know, people like to see a regular dose of a Black woman doing something for her, just for her own enjoyment. Every single, you know, almost every single day. And I think it gives people inspiration, a sense of freedom that whatever their thing is, because not everyone likes makeup. There's plenty of, you know, I have a friend who's this, you know, bearded white dude who I don't think has ever worn makeup a day in his life. And anytime I do, sometimes I'll do little videos while I'm putting makeup on, talking about politics while I'm putting makeup on. And he logs on every time. He's like, I just love seeing someone who's known for doing something completely different because it's what they want to do. And it just makes me happy and lets me know that sort of freedom exists. And I think that whatever we can do to, you know, whatever your thing is that you love to do just because you love to do it, you know, I think that you should, and you should be proud of it, and you should make excuses for it. And so this is my thing.
Well, I love watching it on Instagram, I will tell you. Ijama, it's been so nice to have you on the podcast. Your book is available anywhere and everywhere. It's So You Want to Talk About Race. But where else can our listeners find you online?
You know, primarily social media. You can, everything's under my name. You want to find me on Twitter, it's under Ijoma Oluo. You want to find me Facebook, Ijoma Oluo. You want to see my makeup on Instagram, it's all Ijoma Oluo. So just Google my name. I figure it's a fun name to learn, and once you've learned it, you shouldn't have to learn anymore. And you can find me everywhere there.
And are you working on a second book?
I am. Yeah. So I'm working on a book that's kind of a history of white male identity in America. And hopefully then it will be my last book I write about whiteness for a very long time.
Well, I look forward to it. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. We really appreciate it.
It was such a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
You too.
Same to you.
Bye. Well, Kate, I'm glad we got to talk about this stuff.
I am too. And we will keep talking about it. And
yep.
We really appreciate your feedback and thoughts. So please don't hesitate to reach out to us. Our email is forever35podcast@gmail.com. Sometimes I forget.
Yes.
And our voicemail is 781-591-0390.
And our podcast is hosted and produced by me, Dori Shafrir, and you, Kate Spencer, and produced and edited by Sammy Junio, and Sam Reed is our assistant. And we will talk to you all on Friday.
Thanks.
Bye.